This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, 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 and good morning. Welcome to the Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. It's Friday, or yes. Friday, as I like to call it. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Tan Cheng Han here with me and guest hosting with us this morning, Giri Balakrishnan. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Good morning.
6 o'clock on Friday the 24th of August, and we're going to take you all the way up to from 6 o'clock till 10 a.m. with all the latest news and all the news and views you need to know as you start your day today, including the fact that U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has responded to Donald Trump's latest attack on him. Jeff Sessions is insisting that the Justice Department, of which he heads, will not be bending to any form of political pressure.
Well, this looks like a similar kind of situation where we are looking at the separation of powers between the government body and the legal body. I think that distinction needs to be very clear. So there is clear lines being drawn between the two.
Well, actually, so he's responding to a tweet that Donald Trump made. So this is really quite interesting because it all ties back into that investigation with, the Russian interference with the elections in 2016. So Jeff Sessions had been an early supporter of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has very clearly said, well, you know, the only reason I gave you that job was because I thought you were a supporter. I thought you were loyal. But Jeff Sessions had recused himself from heading that particular inquiry and had passed it on to his deputy. So Donald Trump is very upset with that because he said, why would I give you the job if you're going to recuse yourself?
And right. So you've got, again, a man here who was put into position because of Donald Trump. So some key Republicans right now are giving Donald Trump, the credit, saying that, the U.S. president has the right to, has a DOJ that he trusts. Not DOJ, but the...
Attorney General.
Yeah, the Attorney General, right? So they're saying that, and so now looks like Jeff Sessions' position as the U.S. Attorney General, that may be under threat now. So, which begs the question, right, how far are you willing to stand up for your principles at risk of your job?
For sure.
Like, do you bite the hand that feeds you?
Yeah, and I think the pressure on Donald Trump will continue mounting after the Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen cases in the US, and I think the legal turmoil there will continue for POTUS. But since we're still focused on the US, let's move to Hollywood on the other side of the coast. The popular geek sitcom The Big Bang Theory has announced that its 12th season is going to be its last. Aww. And you say, but a lot of people are saying it's about time.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess after 200 plus episodes, it is.
Is it 200 plus
episodes? Something like that, right? So, after 12 seasons, I worked for One Tree Hill way back
when. I remember that.
Yeah. And so when we celebrated the 100th episode, that was a big deal as well. So the thing that this show actually went on for over 279 episodes. That's huge. I mean, Friends...
Longer than Friends.
Yeah, Friends only had like, what, 7 seasons?
10 seasons.
Okay, fine.
Okay, I have a confession. I've never actually watched Big Bang Theory.
Oh, so. Man. Where have you been for the last 11 years?
No, but I've been a big supporter of Friends, though. I've watched many episodes of Friends over and over again. But Big Bang Theory, no, it's not just... didn't do anything for me.
You look like a One Tree Hill fan.
Well, tell us if that makes you sad that Big Bang Theory is going to be ending. You can join our conversation this morning by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. And speaking about... focusing on the millennial-friendly, in a sign of the times, Procter & Gamble wants to trademark the three-letter acronyms including LOL and WTF and OMG, all to use in their dishwashing detergents and soap. So really, this is hilarious that they want to go to the trademark office, the patents and trademark office, and say that they want to trademark all these acronyms that have been, come into our lexicon over text.
Because this resonates with the market that they're aiming to target effectively. I mean, would you go and buy something which has got WTF written on it?
Actually, that's my number plate.
So she literally did. Yeah.
I literally did. Yeah.
I mean, well, remember when Paris Hilton tried to trademark, or she did trademark the phrase, that's hot?
That's hot, yeah.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I can understand the business rationale for trying to trademark these terms. But, you know, these are terms that are so ingrained into our everyday vocabulary,
yeah.
Especially when we WhatsApp, right?
So, can you imagine not being able to use LOL anymore in text? If PNG trademarks this, you're not allowed to use LOL anymore.
Right, exactly.
You have to put the LOL in a TM.
Yeah, TM or registered trademark, yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh,
a private entity taking ownership of these words that are, you know, for the common man.
You might have to pay for using it.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Han, what would your trademarked catchphrase be?
The story that keeps on giving.
Okay, yeah, actually, I don't know. Use that a lot.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
All right, we'll come back with a look at what it would take for you to become a fan of a new band. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on Friday, the 24th of August. Melissa, Han and Giri guest hosting with us this morning on The Morning Run. Good morning to Socialist on Twitter who just tweeted in listening from Penang. And you can always listen to us wherever you are by downloading the BFM app. We're not on FM radio yet.
In Penang.
In Penang, yeah. Outside of the Klang Valley, but you can always listen to us by downloading our BFM app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. That was Sweet Home Alabama by Lynyrd Skynyrd. Some sad news. The former Lynyrd Skynyrd guitarist, Ed King, he co-wrote that song, Sweet Home Alabama. He has just passed away overnight. Cause of death is yet unknown. But according to Rolling Stone magazine, he had been battling lung cancer for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I'd spent over 7 years in the American South. That
this
song,
must be your anthem.
Yeah, it was one of the anthems. You know, that and Honk-a-Tonk, Badonk-a-Donk. That's a chat for another day.
Honk-a-Tonk, Badonk-a-Donk.
Yeah, that's a real song there. but but this song, yeah. You know, and of course, it inspired that movie with Reese Witherspoon.
That's right. And in fact, you can hear Ed King doing that countdown, the 1, 2, 3 at the start of the song. All right, well, speaking about musicians, the South Korean boy band BTS will be appearing twice in the 2019 edition of the Guinness World Book of Records because the group has the record for the most Twitter engagements, with each tweet averaging 330,000 retweets, replies, likes, or other interactions. The previous record was held by a Mr. Harry Styles from One Direction.
Great bands, this BTS and One Direction. I mean, these are people, you know, they really, really ring a bell, a Twitter bell. You know?
Wait a minute.
Here's a guy who grew up listening to, you know, bands like Def Leppard and Dire Straits. I mean, BTS, Harry Styles, okay.
So clearly not quite the fan of Big Bang Theory or BTS.
Now, Mel, you started off by introducing them as musicians, though. Now,
no,
this,
not musicians, are they not?
Well, there we go. So I think that's a point of contention, right? Because some would argue that, you know, these guys are heavily manufactured products of the mainstream pop industry, and they're not musicians per se. While they certainly don't play their own music instruments, the reason I know this is because I actually had to Google BTS recently. I had no idea who they were, and unfortunately, BTS is now in part of my YouTube search history. So that's a different story.
So they will predict that you like them. No, give you this.
Yeah. So I mean, and this stems from a discussion I had with my students recently, you know, whereby, I mean, I was just kind of slagging off the Korean pop scene. I thought that was easy game, but no, my students were livid that I picked on BTS.
How old are your students?
Like, you know, mid-teens, you know. So yeah, Giri's age, yeah, they're about same demographics.
Okay, well, so BTS is known to have a fiercely loyal fan base. And I would say a lot of the Korean pop bands or girl bands as well have very fiercely loyal fans. You could say the same for any big group, really. I mean, the Beatlemania, you know, Backstreet Boys mania. I am guilty of that a little bit. But you have at every generation an idea of, you know, a loyal fan base for a group that you have that the music resonates with you, and you can't have anyone say anything bad about them, right?
Yeah, I think it's also also in the way that we actually express our appreciation for their music. You know, we have a different media platform now to do it than previously. I mean, how would we, you know, during the Beatles era, communicate with our with the rest of the fans? You know, it would be through, I suppose, through snail mail.
Now, yeah, I joined a fan club for KRU when I was 12.
Oh,
okay,
no way.
And I wrote in, and they wrote back to me with like a bookmark or something, and made me the happiest fan on earth. And I paid a subscription fee, if I'm not mistaken. But the question is, how do we, after you pass a certain age, right, when we stop listening to new music? Research has shown that after the age of 33 or so, you stop listening to new music. How do you become fans or as loyal? Do you lose that kind of loyalty to the music that you used to listen to? And how do you kind of re-engage with new bands like BTS? Can you become a BTS fan at this day, like at this age, guys?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a big ask, right? I think firstly, you've got some reputational risk involved as well. I mean, think about it. You know, if you, Giri, if you find yourself at the BTS concert, people are going to question you. Like, what are you doing?
Maybe
over
not
there?
Alone. That would be a little bit creepy.
Trust me, I would be alone if I'm going.
In more ways than one.
Right. So tell us what you think. How do you become fans of new music, new bands? How do you discover new music and new bands? We'd love to hear from you. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a look at how politicians should be, if politicians should be able to flaunt their wealth. We'll discuss that after this on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:22 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run with Melissa Han and guest host Giri. Now, we're looking at K-pop, was what we were talking about a little earlier. And Bernice, or her handle, Burn Panda, has tweeted in. And she says that K-pop is something different in a sense. Lots of fans come from various age backgrounds. So even aunties and uncle fans also are quite loyal as well.
Aww.
And Mr. Tan has weighed in saying that K-pop cannot, the BTS cannot be compared with the Fab Four. So he says, no comparison to be made there.
All right. End of discussion.
End of discussion. Yeah, exactly. No compromise there. Okay, well, let's take a quick look at over in Singapore, where an MP called Chong Ki Hyung, he made news recently for parking his white Bentley at a country club where he serves as president. Now, there was quite a backlash on social media in Singapore, because whenever word gets out that a minister or an MP or a public servant spends money indiscriminately, I think the commentators who are commenting on this say that people almost take it as a personal insult because they see it as a representation of how their valuable tax dollars are being squandered.
Well, the thing is, I mean, how do you know that it is from the valuable tax dollars that he has bought a Bentley or lives in a fancy house or whatever it may be? What is the person's background? Maybe he comes from a well-to-do background and he already had the Bentley and the house in Beverly Hills or
yeah,
whatever
so,
it may
so
be.
The backlash on social media is even though they have this, say, all money, they shouldn't be flaunting it.
They shouldn't be flaunting it.
That's the question that we're asking this morning.
Yeah, because I guess the perception is that these MPs are supposed to be the servants of the people, right? So, you know, if that is your mandate, then you shouldn't really be rubbing it in terms of how much wealth you have, especially if you have got constituents who are less well off, right? I mean, I think it's safe to assume that. But personally, I really don't care, you know, because once again, I am more focused on the policies that these individuals either propose or execute or support, you know, rather than their lifestyles, because you know it really has got very little bearing on, you know, how it impacts my day-to-day life.
You are actually one of the few minority people who perhaps don't take exception to that. I think there are a lot of people who view politicians as public service, right? Mm. So you're in this public service, completely different, say, from the private sector, where if you see wealth being flaunted, it's almost aspirational. You see someone driving a Bentley, you'd be like, ooh, I wish I could afford that. As opposed to, say, even if politicians had made their money from business or from, from family wealth, that kind of flaunting of extravagance or excessive wealth can be off-putting because you're thinking, well, how exactly do I know that money did not come from your position?
So does that mean that politicians should have or should show frugality in their daily life? Wouldn't that be a little bit, that's their personal life, isn't it?
Well, I mean, because they have to contend with the optics of their position, right? You know, there is a responsibility there. You know, again, it comes down to, you know, why are they here? They are there to serve the people, right? And so by virtue of that, you got to deal with the reputational risks that are associated with the job. I get that. But again, you know, personally, it doesn't really fluster me. I mean, for example, you've got Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who's announced his intention to run for the U.S. presidency, God knows when, right? So when he does that, you know that he's a successful movie star, so he's got the money there. So it's one thing for Dwayne The Rock Johnson, but he still plays to the crowd, though. You know, he's all Mr. Nice Guy, you know, giving gifts and whatnot, and not necessarily flaunting his wealth per se, at least not that I can see. I'm not on Instagram, so I don't know.
All right, well, we've got the 6:30 News Bulletin coming up next, and to take you there, The Naked and Famous with Young Blood on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Kim Khan's there with Betty Davis Eyes. Coming up to 6:40 right now on Friday the 24th of August. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han, and our guest host this morning is Giri Balakrishnan. Now, last week, Elon Musk had a really emotional, I guess, breakdown on Twitter, where he said that because he was working so hard to keep up with the production of the Model 3 of Tesla, he missed his own birthday. And, you know, there was also comments about him working 120-hour weeks, not leaving the factory for 3 or 4 days. There was also comments about him, I believe, sleeping on the factory floor, skipping showers, and you know, really just putting in those long hours. So the question now is whether the days of worshipping alcoholism and this kind of drive. Sorry, excuse me. Did I say alcoholism?
Yes, you did.
I meant to say workaholism.
Well, we know it's Friday by now, 6:40 a.m. Not quite happy hour yet, Melissa.
Was that a Freudian slip?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Worshipping workaholism was what I meant. And the idea of really pushing yourself to keep up with work productivity, especially in the Silicon Valley, is that long gone now? Because after what we've seen with Elon Musk's erratic tweets this past couple of weeks, should we be looking at a more balanced and sustainable lifestyle?
Yeah, looking at the mental state of any employee or in the working environment, I think would be quite significant if you've got this kind of stress. This guy is working 120 hours a week. That's like three times more than any other ordinary employee's work hours. This eight-hour day thing was actually established sometime in 1916, where you had the balance of 8 hours of labor, 8 hours of recreation, 8 hours of rest. Without that balance, it's very likely that there will be some kind of mental or even physical breakdown.
I don't know anyone who gets 8 hours of recreation as an adult. Do you?
Yeah, well, certainly not me. Well, okay, look, I think what really muddies the outlook on Elon Musk is because of that very erratic behavior, right? He was always very contentious with, short sellers, with the markets, investors, etc.
Reporters.
So, yeah, reporters, and during his conference calls as well, right? So we get that. But if you take that aside, if let's say this Tesla story became this, monumental success. Well, it is a success on many counts as well, but in terms of profitability, perhaps not quite there yet, sustained profitability. But if let's say, he was able to do that without that erratic behavior, would we be talking about him in the same light?
What do you mean
right
without
now?
The erratic behavior?
So if let's say,
that would be a boring story.
Right. Well, there we go. So if let's say he still forgo those showers, spent his birthday on the factory floor, etc. But then, hey, tada, I've got this shiny new revolutionary Tesla car model that is self-sustaining, profitable, and that can change automotive ownership for the rest of human existence. They would be like applauding him, right? So it's because of these rather unsavory episodes, that's why we're starting to question, whether or not this 120 hours a week is really worth it all.
I think one leads to the other, Han. So I think that, you you wouldn't be able to have the 120-hour weeks and the sleepless nights and the sleeping on the factory floors without that kind of a breakdown and erratic behavior. So I think it's inevitable that this kind of behavior happens, and perhaps, you know, causation, not correlation or whatever, it could be that it's all because of this idea that you have to work nonstop to chase this this deadline, so to speak.
Well, but it is driven by passion, right? Steve Jobs, for example, he was seen as somebody who, you know, constantly failed to disengage from work, for example. You know, he was seen as a workaholic, to say the least, as well. No, but yet his achievements are still very much celebrated today. So, you know, I wonder if, you know, Elon Musk could have done with a bit more PR managing. Just don't tweet when you are, you know, running on like a 2-hour sleep or whatever.
At 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, tell that to Donald Trump as well. Yeah.
You know, Rick brings a question. I mean, is the success of companies like Tesla or Google or any one of these companies, is it because they put in these kind of hours per week, the leaders of these corporations, is it because they put in 120 hours in a week or 100 hours a week, you know, well in excess of what would be considered a healthy number of hours or a good balance in life? I think that question really needs to be answered,
but
to some degree.
But it's also about how long can you sustain this peak performance,
sure,
right? Like, you want to be running at the capacity that you're running on at 120, but how long can you do that for? Especially, you know, your body will eventually give up. And at what point do you say, I'm overworked, right? So what is overworked, really?
Well, see, that's because we are using the term work, right? As opposed to, say, you're pursuing your passion.
So overpassioned?
Yeah. So if let's say you are pursuing your passion, you don't mind the 120 hours. You don't mind the sleeping in the office, right? I mean, I've done that a couple of times before because I was truly passionate about a particular project.
Yeah, but okay, as Mel was saying, I mean, you may be passionate about doing something, but how much can your body take? How much you take mentally?
Mentally is also very important. And after this, we're going to come back and look at the question of whether we need an index to measure the psychological well-being of Malaysians in the workplace. We'll tell you more in just a little bit. Stay tuned to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, coming up to 6:50 right now, Friday the 24th of August. I'm Melissa Idris with Tanjung Han and Giri Balakrishnan, our guest host this morning. That was Travis with 3 Miles High. And just coming back to our discussion about Elon Musk and overworking, we have a WhatsApp from an anonymous person who says, well, what about the old man? And I'm guessing he or she is referring to Tun Dr. Mahathir. And the question that this person is asking is, perhaps a workaholic because one doesn't have much time left?
Well, you know, but again, or is he doing it out of passion, right? He has a vision for Malaysia, right? Even at age 93, and he's more than willing to put in those hours there. So are we putting him in the same line as Elon Musk? Because both appear to be overworking. I mean, just ask Tun Siti Hazma. She will say that her husband is clearly overworking himself at age 93. Mm. But without the same erratic behavior that you see from Elon Musk, at least Tun Dr. Mahathir is not tweeting them publicly. You know, that's right. So there we go. So, you know, on one hand, there's passion, there's work, and what really is overworking? Does 120 hours really count as overworking per se?
Well, we also have to talk about mental capacity. In the case of our dear Tun Mahathir, I'm not sure if we should make any comparison with Elon Musk, but the hours that he puts in may be significantly different to what Elon Musk is putting in. So the quality of the time spent doing whatever it may be significantly different. We can't really make a comparison from that perspective, I would think.
I mean, sure, yeah, it's not like for like, but in terms of just sheer numbers, right? I think Tun Dr. Mahathir has said before as well, if there were more hours in a day, he would stay up and still work those hours, right? So the drive is clearly there. But yet how we handle both individuals is obviously very different. And I dare say the distinctive factor here is the erratic tweets and erratic behavior from Elon Musk.
So what if you didn't know, say someone you were working with is showing symptoms or signs of erratic behavior, but you didn't know that it was coming from a lack of well-being or overworking, right? So the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, the chairman of that institute, Tan Sri Lee Lam Tai, he is saying that what Malaysia really needs is to have its own index. And this is to measure the psychological well-being of Malaysians. So his argument is that this index is particularly important to gauge the psychological state of those who are working. So what we did was we tried to get a specialist's perspective. We spoke to Dr. Angela, a psychologist, trauma specialist, and co-author of the best-selling textbook, Why Global Health Matters. And then we asked her what a psychological well-being index should look like.
Well, I think before creating an index, it's good to have participatory responses and action from those that are involved, stakeholders. So, you know, civil society, lay people, researchers, people from different domains, whether it's nutrition, dietitians, psychiatrists, psychologists, wellness coaches. I think we could all come together and, you know, sort of have an open table discussion or a focus group. And that would help shape a contextually and culturally appropriate index. I mean, definitely you can get guidelines from elsewhere, but, you know, every country, and in this instance, Malaysia, is unique with its struggles, with its strengths. So, you know, an index needs to reflect that. Religion, social, cultural circumstances, they all have an effect on health and how we look at things. You know, certain foods, certain practices sometimes are banned or encouraged by religion. So we all have to take these into account when creating an index.
Now, we also asked Dr. Anjula if this index could potentially be misused, say, in terms of dismissal or suspension.
We always run the risk of research, you know, breakthroughs in science being misused. On the one hand, you know, if we don't have a robust public service announcement and, you know, a debunking of the myths around mental health and the stereotypes and stigmas, then perhaps the dismissal or suspension could be used in a dysfunctional way. But on the one hand, it could also be looked at as compassionately. If bosses and CEOs and leaders are trained to see burnout, people suffering from depression, potential suicide, then a dismissal where it's mandatory to get therapy or mental health or your insurance or the company insurance mandates it and covers it, and I've worked with companies like that that are forward-thinking, can actually be the best thing that you've done for your workforce. So, you know, a temporary dismissal and suspension can actually be, you know, the silver lining.
That was Dr. Angela Singh Bai, psychologist and co-author of the book Why Global Health Matters. What do you guys think? Do you think we could that this could happen? A psychological wellness index that could be implemented in the private sector?
Look, I agree and I fully support such measures, right? And I guess I can say this on air. You know, even here at BFM, we have some measures to help boost the level of mental health here at BFM as well. Whether that's indicative of our current state, that's a whole different story, okay? But whether or not you can, you know, encapsulate all these qualitative data into a number or into an index, mm-hmm. I wonder how effective it will be. You know, say, for example, if you ask me how happy I am today, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I tell you I'm an 8 or a 9. What does an 8 or 9 really mean? Because these are feelings, these are perhaps more qualitative
in
nature.
Sure, but if you were to break it down and say, okay, Han, how many hours of sleep did you get? How many hours of downtime did you get? How many hours away from your screen did you get, right? So those things are quantitative.
Yeah, But that's subjective, right? You know, I could be very happy on 2 hours of sleep, you know, after I've had a really, really nice party or something, all right? Or
let's not go there.
Yeah. Or I could be miserable after having a disastrous holiday away as well, right?
So, you know, flight delays,
and you know, I lost my loved one.
I mean, luggage
lost. I mean, I lost my holiday fling or whatever it is. Yeah.
Well, you know, you may not be aware of your mental state. You know, there are statistics that show that, you know, World Health Organization actually shows that more than 300 million people are experiencing clinical depression. How would you know if you have clinical depression? You may just feel, I feel a bit down today, but maybe you are actually going through clinical depression. You wouldn't know.
But this is why I think education and awareness about mental health is important. So you do you do recognize the symptoms that you are going through something called depression, right?
Sure.
And you know, many people have said psychological health is as important as physiological health, and often one is tied back to the other. So I think having this kind of psychological wellness index is really quite important, something perhaps that we can consider in the new Malaysia. All right, well, we've got the 7 o'clock news bulletin coming up next, and to take you there, we have The Doors with The Crystal Ship, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.